Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Edmonton Oilers have been winning games away from home more than losing. But over the last bunch of games, they can't seem to win at their own arena, Rogers Place. The question, of course, is why? Is it just another thing that's in the water?
I'm Jim Matheson.
I'm Rob Tichkowski.
And I'm Craig Ellingson. I talk to these hockey beat writers from the Edmonton Journal and the Edmonton Sun about the Oilers' woes at home, plus the prospects of getting top four defenseman Andre Sekera back in the lineup soon, what it'll mean, and who they'll have to move off the roster. Plus, we talk about the winning ways of their farm team, the Bakersfield Condors of the AHL, and about former Oilers coach Dallas Eakins looking at getting another shot soon in the NHL. This is the Oil Spills Podcast for Tuesday, February 12th, 2019. How do you explain they have a winning record on the road over the last dozen games, yet at home they're absolutely abysmal? How do you explain that? Are they paying too much attention to social media when they get back to Edmonton or something?
They are a fragile group. There's no question about that. And then things tend to go wrong early for them. And then when that happens in Edmonton, and it's a very antiseptic rink. It's not a good atmosphere there. They've, you know, like in this is the case in Toronto to some extent, you price out the average fan, so you're left with people at the games who are, you know, higher income people who aren't quite as rowdy as, you know, the beer drinkers you had back in the, you know, the 70s and 80s, and the atmosphere in the rink isn't very good at all, you know, in terms of scoreboard stuff. It's all commercials, so they don't do much, you know, from a entertainment standpoint to help the players out or the team out, or the atmosphere out, but it all boils down to the team. You know, you score a few goals and win a fight, you know, the place will be going. And they're just, they're not a very good team, and they're a little fragile, and they tend to start slowly, and those three ingredients at home add up to just a place that's just a dead building where a lot of losing's going on.
It is hard. They play a totally different game on the road. It's almost like they go into the game afraid they're going to lose, so they play hard from the start. And even if they lose, it's a fairly close game. But at home, that's when they're getting beat badly. In a lot of these games, it's at home, not in the road. So I don't know. It's unfortunately, they've got lots of home games left after this month. You know, March has got lots of home games in it, I think. So by then, they could be out of it. So it might not matter. They don't dictate the way the game. Most home teams that are good, they dictate the way the game's going to go right off the hopper. And you're the visiting team, we're the home team, and we're getting you down. And whether that's a Winnipeg or a Tampa or whomever, you know, they're going to beat you. And the Oilers play their way into the games at home. And often they're getting scored on first, or they're down a couple of goals after one period.
Is there a rink in the NHL? I mean, you talked about Toronto being the antiseptic place with, you know, the high-priced seats and whatnot. Who does it differently than Edmonton? Like most everybody else? Are there other examples of rinks like that in the NHL?
Well, it's funny. Montreal, you know, they're very high ticket prices and a very, you know, highbrow fan base, but it's a great atmosphere. It's loud and it's exciting, and you know, you can feel the energy as soon as you walk inside of it. But there are a lot of dead rinks, you know, a lot of, you know, Arizona and some of the others are, you know, some teams do it right. Some fan bases are just more energetic. Like Nashville's a great place to watch a game. Vegas is incredible, but they work hard. You know, they've created that atmosphere themselves. You do have to work at it. You know, your whole in-game presentation can't be a commercial. You have to pay some attention to getting the fans fired up, showing them some, you know, some clips and some hits and some highlights and the whole deal. And that's, you know, that just simply doesn't happen here. It's about money. It's about making, you know, the money off your commercials. But at the end of the day, it boils down to the guys on the ice. You have to, you know, you saw in the playoffs, you know, fans at Edmonton will get riled up if you give them something to get excited about. And this is just, let's be honest, it's just a below average team that's underachieving slightly.
You know, you go back to after the San Jose game and Hitchcock talking about how his team is basically underperforming or not putting enough determination and effort to win those games. You know, I don't know what comes first, the players not getting pumped up enough, or who knows? Hockey is hockey. Sports is sports. You can't maintain that high level of all the time. And there's peaks and valleys in everything. And obviously the Oilers are in a bit of a big valley when it comes to playing at home. Anyway, I don't know if that really... I guess I'm trying,
I don't know.
I'm trying to crack the puzzle here.
They just... I don't think playing determined hockey is in the Oilers' DNA.
They can do it
for they can do it for a game or two, but then I don't see them winning six or seven games in a row, whether you're Arizona or Chicago or St. Louis. St. Louis got better players, but Arizona and Chicago, with the Chicago team being what they are now, they seem able to play determined hockey and somehow win the games. And the Oilers, they should have just parked that game they played against Minnesota the other night and said, okay, that's one game, let's forget about it, and now we got to beat a much better team. And if we play the same style we played against Minnesota, we got a chance. They won easy if it's playing that style against Minnesota, but a stronger team. They didn't, but maybe they'd have lost 3-2, 2-1, not the game over so quickly. And I don't think they go into these games, I don't know if they can check well enough to do it for any length of time. Checking's hard, but checking's certainly easier than scoring a goal. You know, weak teams do it all the time. They keep the games close. And they're not even getting to the point where they're scraping out, at home anyway, scraping out points. You know, you lose in overtime. They're not even getting any points. They just lose.
I mean, everybody knows, like, you know, fire your general manager in the middle of the season because the roster's not that bad. You know, you fire him because it's a train wreck. And I think that almost let the players off the hook a little bit. Like, they looked around and said, yeah, this is a crappy roster. So, you know, it's not our fault. They've just built a terrible team here. And I think that took a little bit of the fight out of them, maybe. I don't know. I don't want to speak for them, but it's sort of, you know, it's not a good roster. You look at that lineup top to bottom, it's not good, but they should still be getting more out of it. Like, they're still underachieving for what they do have. They should be better than they are right now because they've shown here and there, you know, they went on those 8-2-1 runs a couple of times that, you know, if you get the goaltending and your high-end guys are producing, then the rest of the guys can just do enough that, you know, don't get in the way and you can be a good hockey team. But, you know, we can all accept that it's not a very good roster. That's why Chiarelli got fired. But they should be still playing better than they are right now because this is... Like I said the other day, like, they almost seemed like they accepted defeat against San Jose. Like, they're a better team. What are we going to do? And just waited for that game to be over. And that's kind of what pushed Hitchcock over the edge afterward.
You know, I find it funny, Ian, you know, to use the goaltending to segue into why Cam Talbot's getting the starts seemingly over Koskinen these days.
He won't get the start in Pittsburgh. Cam's had his run of three in a row. Koskinen will be playing it. But I see where you're coming. Yeah. Well, he's just looking for one goalie.
To catch fire,
like St. Louis is with some goalie named Binnington when Allen was their starter. And now Allen sits on the bench, and this other kid comes in, and he's winning games, and just keep playing him. Coaches are creatures of habit. They don't sign the contracts. The GM signs the contracts. The coach just wants the goalie that can win them the games. And that has been Talbot the last little while. Now we'll see if Koskinen can play as well as he did over that stretch of home games there where he was unbeatable. But that's been a long time since we've seen that.
Fans at Edmonton are holding their breath, waiting to see how this guy responds to, you know, not only the big contract, but, you know, Cam Talbot starting for the last five or whatever it was. Like, you know, they went all in on this guy to be their number one. So he needs to start playing. And being a number one is a different animal than just being a you know, a 1A or a backup or one. And you have to be really good 8-9 times out of 10. The measure of us good starting goalie is how consistently good you are. So he can't play two really good games and then one stinker and then three really good games and a stinker. He has to be elite level for 8 out of 10 games, and that's a tall order, especially on this team.
The Oilers need Dwayne Roloson right about now to get hot like he did at the end of that year, and he was unbeatable, and then they got into the playoffs. They need a goalie that's just going to play every game and win them some games. There haven't been many of those this year where the goalie's stolen games against a really strong team, and at the end of the night you said, oh, like last night the Rangers goalie Georgiev made 55 saves and they beat the Leafs 4-1. You know, so there haven't been too many of those nights in a while.
I mean, obviously Koskinen was in net and gained the net in November at the beginning there, and obviously once Hitchcock took over from McClellan, Koskinen was the guy. And he obviously played very well in those games. You know, obviously we were hoping he gets back to that. And Roloson was acquired. Was he acquired before the deadline? Or was pretty close?
The deadline.
It was at the deadline.
First round draft.
And we still got a week or so, give or take. Oh, a couple weeks. What am I saying?
25th, yeah.
I'm ready for spring to start here,
They're in seller mode right now, unless they suddenly win.
Oh, I know, but you know,
win three or four in a row here and get back into it.
I'm not suggesting the owners are buyers at the deadline at this point.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that there's time. I mean, if you want your goalie to catch fire, and clearly they're hitching their wagon to Koskinen, there is still time. But obviously, time is ticking away. The owners are a few points back of the wild card race, and there's a whole bunch of teams.
Yeah, six is a lot. And five. I mean, when you're a couple points out, you can kind of see it now. Six is basically one loss away from being done. You know, if you come home from that 3-game trip and it's 8, see you later.
I think the Oilers, they got 27 games left. They have to win at least 20. Are they suddenly going to go 20-7?
Well, they won 6 of the last 22, so I don't see it highly likely.
Is that what happened in 06?
They won a whole pile of games. Yeah. And the problem with it's not how many points you're behind, it's the number of teams that are ahead of you. And they're playing each other. So at the end of the night, one team's getting 2, the other team's probably getting 1, or one of those teams for sure is getting points, and they're ahead of you. If they play each other between now and the end of the season 15 times, those other teams that are ahead of the Oilers, I mean, how are they catching up? They only catch up if they play those teams head-to-head and they beat them in regulation.
Yeah, well, they'll have a bunch of four-point games coming up at the end of the season, too.
But they're in March, aren't they? Most of the games that they've got
a month or so from now.
They've got some games coming.
I think they play Calgary and San Jose about the last two games. Yeah. Be interesting if they're fighting to see who finishes first in the division. They'll be trying a little harder than the others. Unless the Oilers get it going.
And I'll talk about Andre Sekera, and now he's down in Bakersfield right now. He's played a couple of games, and he'll be coming back. You know, whether he comes back as soon as this week or next week, obviously the Oilers are going to have to make some roster moves in order to accommodate him. And what's that going to be?
Well, he comes back. They got 9 defensemen. I suspect one of the defensemen, Petrovich, hasn't played. He's sat out 5 straight. he's the defenseman that's making the most money. You know, if you're going to dump a player, send him to the minors, and then part of his, the only, you know, only part of his contract that you have, you know, counts against your cap. Reeder hasn't scored a goal all year. He's making $2 million. You know, those players would have to go on waivers, and I don't see any of them getting picked up on waivers. So that's one way to figure it out. But I don't even know if Andre's, when he gets back, how good he's going to be. You know, the tempo of NHL games is somewhat higher than in the American League. But from all reports, he played pretty good in the two games he played in Bakersfield. You may not want to come back. They're winning.
Yeah.
He may petition to stay down in the American League. He still makes the same money whether he's in the NHL or the Bakersfield. So he may say, yeah, this team's won 12 in a row. I think I'll just stay where I am.
And, you know, thanks for segueing into the Condors, but they've won. What is it, 11 in a row now, or is it 12?
12 in a row, yeah.
What's the takeaway there?
The takeaway there is they've got good players there, and the coach, who I think a lot of people were wondering whether he was an assistant coach forever in the NHL, has gone down there as a head coach for the first time and is very successful. And the players play a good style. They play hard, and they win the games. And they have some good players down there. And I think they would like to leave all those players there, to be honest, and say, I'd rather you guys were playing on a team that's winning than call up some of you guys to a team that's not, where you get sucked into the spin cycle of losses. And I think when talking to the young players there.
Yeah, that's a good
The Bensons hire. And the Marauders and Yamamoto's and Caleb Jones and Ethan Bear and those sort of players, just leave them there.
Yeah.
And you guys are winning, and you stay where you are, and we'll see you next year rather than call them up. You can call up some of the third and fourth line guys like Russell and Gambardella and maybe people like that, but leave the young players there.
Yeah, that's a great atmosphere for them. You'd be around a winning culture. You know, up here it's kind of dark, and it's been that way for a long time. But down there, they're learning how to win. They're learning what it takes to go the extra mile, and all of the little things the coaches tell you to do are easy to do when you're winning. A lot easier to do when you're winning because you see the results, and everybody feels great after the games, and it's just a really great positive environment that, you know, Jesse Puljujarvi should probably be part of. As well, because, you know, you bring a guy up here and, you know, you've lost, like I said, you know, 16 of your last 22 games and 11 of your last 13 at home, and the fans are down on you and the media is down on you and the coach is saying, you know, you don't care. I mean, that's not good for a young player. It's not good for a veteran, this atmosphere. So if you have some young players that you're going to kind of, you envision being your future, you know, leave them where they are, because that's a great situation for them right now.
Would you send Puljujarvi down now?
I would have sent him a month ago. He's rotting on the vine.
Except every time you look now, today he's playing on the second line with Nugent Hopkins. So I don't know. I think the coach has a lot more faith in him than the media people. You know, and Ken's the one who pushed to bring him up in the first place as soon as he got the job. He says, you know, this guy should be in the NHL. I don't know. I don't see much there in terms of any wow factor from Jesse, where he makes some plays and you go, oh man, I can see why you were the fourth overall pick.
Yeah.
When he scores a goal, he's like I've said before, it's like he's the most surprised person in the building. You know, he's supposed to be used to that if you're that good a player, but they want him here. So at this stretch of the game where he plays every game, I don't think he's going to the minors.
But I don't see, well, like, what's the one thing he does really well? Like, I don't really...
I mean, to my untrained eye, because you guys are down there every day, I mean, there are times when you notice Puljujarvi coming in. There's a bit of a presence there. Maybe because he's a big body and he can skate. But, I mean, as far as the rest of it goes.
Yeah.
Not much, to use a pun, not much finish there.
Huh.
No. And if they're going to keep him up here, then this, you know, if they come back from this trip 8 points out or 9 points out and it's obvious that they're out, then put him on the first line and leave him there for 22 games and, you know, force feed him into that atmosphere and 'cause this 7-8 minutes on the fourth line is doing nobody any good. So, you know, maybe he wants to, maybe he's better off with skilled players, and if the games don't matter, you can treat it as a 20-game training camp because he is supposedly an important part of your future.
I mean, I didn't do my homework before we came in here to talk about Puljujärvi's ice time and how much he gets, but what is he averaging, 10, 11 minutes a night?
He normally plays between 10 and 12.
Yeah.
It's not, the last little while he's been under 10. But normally plays between 10 and 12.
Yeah, the last game he was 5:30-something after 40 minutes, and then as soon as it got into garbage time, they started playing him a little bit more.
So he played 5 minutes in the third.
It was pumped up. But I mean, in a close game, he hardly sees the ice.
I mean, for as much as Hitchcock says he wants him up here and he wants to give him a chance.
Never plays.
And it's been almost 3 months.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand the logic then. I thought you're just going to use him in that fashion.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I think he should have just been left him down there. Agree with, you know, what Nicholson threw out saying overripe. Yeah, I mean, you should have left him down there. I don't know.
I don't know.
Easy to second guess. I'm not Ken Hitchcock, third most winning NHL coach ever, so.
But this, you know, was the same when the former coach was here, too. He was trying to figure out how to get something out of Todd was figuring how to get something out of Puljujärvi. So It's the same thing.
Related to the AHL, you know, the Anaheim Ducks have, you know, gone into the tank in a big way, and they fired Randy Carlyle. Now, GM Bob Murray has taken over behind the bench. When was the last time he coached in the NHL?
Never.
He's never coached.
Never coached anywhere.
Yeah. I know he played, obviously.
That's like Rob or I stepping in and saying, you know what, I think we can coach. We know enough about hockey.
Charlie taking over from McClellan.
Yeah.
Well, aren't you guys secretly, I mean, because you are covering the team you're covering, aren't you secretly disappointed that they didn't pull a Todd Nelson and bring up Dallas Eakins to coach the rest of the year?
Next year, if they want him next year. I think they've kind of told him he's going to be certainly in the mix for the job next year. I don't think Randy was going to be coaching next year anyway.
Yeah. I think this Murray thing was just an investigative endeavor to see what's wrong with that room.
The old forensic audit from behind the bench.
Yes, he wants to be in the room and look in everybody's eyes, you know, between periods and on the bench and see who's helping and who's the anchor. Because they have a kind of a toxic situation there as well. Like it almost seems like they've quit. So, you know, he's got to make the moves over the summer. Who do I keep and go forward with, and who do I try and get rid of? And this is a unique situation, but to his credit, he's going to roll up his sleeves and get in there and you know, take a look at their eyes before he makes these decisions.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's gone septic. They still have many of their principal players from, you know, obviously Getzlaff and, well, Carey Perry's been injured all year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you still have all your principal pieces in place, more
They've
or
got
less.
Slow quickly.
Right.
Yeah. They're better players. They're slower. Mm-hmm. Like, Perry was not a great skater when he was really effective, but now the game is really fast.
Yeah,
and Getzlaff is still a good player.
Kessler
can't play anymore. He's done, I think, with his hip problem, so he's done. You can't get rid of the contracts, though. It's like he wants to get younger, but he's got these Perry and Kessler making tons of money for many more years. I don't know what he does there. Getzlaff can still play, but the other two guys.
Yeah, sounds a little familiar around here.
Mm-hmm.
Those long-term contracts kill you at the end. So.
Yeah. But I guess my point in bringing it up was mostly about Dallas Eakins.
Well, you know, Dallas has done a nice job with their farm team, and they don't want to get a different farm team coach.
No.
So I think they're saying, look, you've done a good job with the players that are going to be on the team next year, so leave them there and you coach them.
You know, it's been 4 years since he was let go. Let's see, is my math right?
4 years.
It has been 4 years.
It's been 4 years in San Diego.
Yeah, because, it was 4 years since the McDavid draft here coming up right away. But, and, you know, obviously you guys haven't been down in San Diego to watch Dallas Eakins at work, but
I could have gone to watch.
You could have. You were there.
I was not.
I wasn't trying to tell people where you take your holidays.
I wasn't going to watch that.
I was going to say you were in the Maldives or something.
Against the Iowa Wild or whoever they were playing. I wasn't going there.
But, yeah, I think it would be interesting to see Dallas Eakins behind the bench in a different NHL city.
He'll be better.
I'd like to see it. Yeah, he learned some lessons. He's smarter. He's a smart guy. He knows his hockey. And
obviously he was much vilified here.
Lots of guys. Tom Rennie was not very good in Vancouver when he was his first job and was much better after that in New York and Edmonton. So,
well, every coach who's come here has been to some extent vilified, right? Like, it's, you know, not a lot of them have left under glorious circumstances.
You know who left? Ralph Kruger.
Ralph Kruger was the only
guy. The last guy, because he almost got him into the playoffs there in the lockout season. They just kind of ran out of gas the last 10 games. Yeah. But he played really well, and a lot of their young players played well for Ralph. Yeah. So,
well, they leave here, and their stock is pretty low because they got fired, and it was a losing team. And then the further they get from it, and the more people watch the Oilers, they go, oh, okay, your stock starts to rise again. Maybe it wasn't Dallas Aiken's fault. Maybe it wasn't Todd McClellan's fault. You know, McClellan, when he left, probably his stock was dropped considerably. And now the more you see of this team, you're like, okay, it's...
It wasn't so much him.
It wasn't so much. You know, you got McClellan and Hitch. How many wins do they have between them? And they're scratching their head thinking.
Yeah, they're both. Well, the records, I think, are exactly the same now. One game under 500, I think, from when Todd was here. And
I just think it's interesting. You know, Aiken's obviously got another pro coaching shot after Edmonton. And he is a young coach still. But, you know, there was plenty of people, criticizing the way he ran. He coached the team.
Well, I think Todd McClellan can coach the Los Angeles Kings next year, too, if he wants the job. Hmm. Rob Blake's the GM. Rob Blake used to be the captain when Todd McClellan was the coach in San Jose. So that's not a great roster either.
I think Aikens, he learned a little bit of humility. Like, he was trying to coach an NHL team the way he coached an AHL team, and there's a big difference, when you've got hungry guys who will... It's almost like a college atmosphere where you can be a little more old school and aggressive with them. But that doesn't work at the NHL level. Remember when he brought all those guys in for a week of 8 a.m. practices because he wanted to show them what the working man has to go through, driving through rush hour. And wow, that turned everything bitterly sour.
I think it went really sideways for Dallas on that incident where Taylor Hall smashed the water bottle down because he came off the ice mad. They'd scored a goal or whatever, and it sprayed all over Dallas. And Dallas, didn't take it too well.
No.
Instead of just shrugging it off, it wasn't a beer; it was some water. But Dallas, I think Dallas will be the second time around. Will be just fine.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because one thing that sticks to my mind about him is it seemed like he was always accessible. Like he had his own exit press conference the day after.
Who does that?
I still haven't talked to Todd.
No. I was at a Sharks game, and he was, San Diego's not that far away. He came up in the press box and just, hey, Rob, how's it going? And talked for about 10 minutes about things. So he's a good guy, approachable guy, not afraid of the firing line or whatever. So I think I'd like to see him back in the league just to see how it goes. If it's another train wreck, then those are always
most
fun.
Coaches get a second chance if they still, like I said, agree with Rob, if they go somewhere else and they're fairly successful, they get a second chance to coach. Now, two tries, to get a third, you got to be really scrambling. Yeah. Two, you get two.
That's our Oil Spills podcast for today. You can listen to our show via iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud.